This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. It's your club, and this is your show.
Well, the big one is here. The Champions League final is on the horizon, and if you're anything like me, then the nerves are already getting out of hand. Welcome to today's Blue Moon Podcast, where we're going to spend the next hour and a bit trying to calm each other down, and let's be honest, probably failing to calm each other down as well. We're also saying our goodbyes to Sergio Aguero, who played his final match for City at the Etihad on Sunday, and Howard Hockin will be back on the show later on as well. I'm your host, David Mooney. I'm joined this week by City fans Chris Higginbottom.
Hey, hope you're all right.
I'm not too bad, thanks. And Richard Burns.
All right, guys, how you doing?
Can't complain. Chris, you well?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. You know, can't grumble. Well, I could, but I won't.
Good. This is the bit of the show where we would normally talk about the games that have just passed. But this week is not a normal week, is it? So we're going to be talking about the departure of Sergio Aguero.
Hi, this is Kieran Murray. I'm beyond gutted and really, really sad to have let go of Sergio Aguero.
Hi, I'm Bob. Aguero, to me, embodies what modern Manchester City is.
Hello, it's Adam. City signed Sergio when my daughter was one or two. She's 11 now, and I've seen her grow up alongside Sergio's City career. It's weird to chart it like that, but that's the kind of impact that he's had over these years. He was part of the City family. It was part of the match day routine. If he was fit, you knew he'd be the first name on the team sheet.
Hi, it's Casey. What does Sergio Aguero mean to me? I love the little man. From the moment he turned up, he was just absolutely incredible. Started scoring against United immediately. Hat-tricks all over the place. An absolutely wonderful little fella.
Hi, I'm Dan Burke. I think like everyone, I knew we'd signed a good player, and after his debut against Swansea, there was no doubt about that, but I could never have imagined he would go on to be such a legend who has embedded himself in City and Premier League folklore forever, really.
How much help has he given us throughout the years with all the silverware? An absolute living legend. Part of that old spine that we used to talk about with Hart, Company, Yaya, David Silva, and Aguero as the spearhead.
His number of goals, the goals to minute ratio is insane. He's the type of footballer that I dreamt of being when I was a kid. He scores all types of goals, headers, long shots, tap-ins, just unbelievable.
One by one, we've watched them all kind of disappear. The last one just was a complete living legend, and I swear we'll never see anything like him ever again.
He's just a truly special player, one that we'll miss ridiculously. We won't replace him like for like because you can't. There'll only ever be one Sergio. He was the first player to win us that title. He was the first striker to get us to those levels that we'd never seen before, certainly in this generation.
Great player. Just seems a fantastic guy, and I'm just going to miss him so much. Could score every type of goal under the sun. He could create goals for himself. He could make average passes look at world-beating. Great in the air, great off either foot. I think if you think of the typical Sergio Aguero finish, though, it's the hit it until the lever comes off the Casey right into the near post. I don't think there's a better near post finisher that's ever existed in football.
It's really sad to see him go, but I feel like his two goals against Everton and nabbing Wayne Rooney's record was a perfect, poetic way to close the book on his City career, and I wish him all the very best in the next chapter. I think it's true that the term legend gets bandied around a bit too much these days, but if Sergio Aguero isn't a City legend, then who on earth is?
It's heart-wrenching to see him go, but what a perfect way to end by scoring two goals as a substitute against Everton. It's exactly how he started his City career, coming off the bench to score two goals against Swansea. So the symmetry is perfect. I'm so sad to see him go, but an absolute legend.
He just means the world to us. All the tributes, all the thoughts have just been, the outpouring have just been so emotionally, and it's been deserved, thoroughly deserved. His final game was fitting, a great tribute. He showed what he can do. Perhaps he's not shown it enough this season, and we've got to remember he's not fit, and he's still doing those type of things that we've come to love and come to know, and he's just a truly special generational talent.
I'm really going to miss him because I love him, and I'm just gutted that I wasn't there for his last two goals, because man can't go out without being on a high, can he?
Really, really love you, Sergio. Thanks for everything.
tributes there to Sergio Aguero from some of the Blue Moon podcast regulars. How are you both feeling? Chris, how are you feeling?
A little bit flat, but there's, you know, you got to look at what he's given us and be gracious and appreciative. There's also a little bit of an anticipatory bubbling under the surface. I think we all have this secret desire for him to do something in the final against Chelsea, and you know, he wouldn't necessarily be delving into the realms of ridiculousness to think that he might pop up and do something special late on in that game if he comes on as a sub. Or obviously I wouldn't start him, obviously, but you just never know. I mean, he's a big game player, he scores big goals, his record is exemplary, it speaks for itself. Goals per minute, occasion, I mean, superlatives, like the accolades that man elicits are, you know, not, they're manifold and deserved, and I struggle to sort of gather in the language available to me to express what Sergio Aguero means to me as a City fan. I'm gonna miss him like a family member. Like him departing is seriously gonna be a big thing. Like I'm almost a little bit like, it's a bit embarrassing, isn't it? But it's, you know, joy is joy and love is love, and he's just exudes it.
He's both of those things. Yeah, Richard, how are you feeling?
Gutted. It's just sad that he's going, because you sort of feel sometimes like somebody's going to be there forever, because the absolute constant in watching City over the last decade has been Sergio Aguero scoring goals. I don't think there's been a bigger constant than that, other than knowing that the Blue Moon podcast is coming every Thursday or every Friday. Like, it's just a magnificent footballer, an absolutely magnificent footballer. I think there'll always be arguments. I think it was Tiger Woods who said that you can never decide the best in something, but if you're in the conversation, then you've done your bit. And I think Aguero falls into that. But what you can do is you can say his goals to minutes are the best that anybody's ever produced in the Premier League. And there's been some pretty good strikers down the years in our league. So there is supporting evidence to say that he's the best striker to have ever done it in the Premier League. And if you say that, then football is the best it's ever been, because it constantly progresses. So he's the best striker. If you take that view, he's the best striker to have ever done it in this country. Just an absolutely extraordinary footballer. And I'm really sad to see him go. And I think what tugs on my heartstrings a bit, in a way that some of the recent departures haven't done, is it feels a little bit less like his timing. In fact, it feels like, I think we know that. I think it's clear that he would have signed another year if the option was available to him. And I think he, on a sentimental level, deserves to pick his timing. I know that that isn't how you run a business and a football team and build something towards success. But from an emotional point of view, and that's how we as fans should see it, yeah, he deserved to pick his moment. And I feel a little bit sad that he didn't get to do that. But ultimately, like Chris, it's grateful that we got to see him for so long.
Yeah, Chris. You say you can't put into words the emotions. Can you put into words what you think he's done for City in terms of just, I mean, what his goals have meant to City over the last decade?
Well, he gave us a belief from the very moment he burst into our kind of consciousness against Swansea. I'd heard of him. I'd seen little bits. And once I heard we were linked with him, I looked at his bits on YouTube, as you do, and it's like, whoa, this guy can, you know, finish, he can dribble, he's powerful. I mean, I grew up all those years ago looking at players like Romario, and I know the comparison's been made quite a few times, but it's because it's true. I mean, he was a special player, and he's very sort of Romario-esque, but he's beyond Romario-esque. He's not, you know, he's his own. People will get compared to Sergio Aguero if they're very good and very lucky. So it's almost a disservice to compare Sergio to another player, but it's just so many qualities. He's not only is his goals to minutes ratio absolutely phenomenal, which suggests that as you need to be with a striker, that you get the ball, you're near the goal, you're in between the posts, and you get a shot on target, and it goes in, you score goals. But he's unselfish in so many ways as well. The amount of times, you know, in terms of his character, there was a time where Jesus was going through really the player.
I mean, not our Lord and Saviour.
Yeah, that was going to just like segue into a parable, but there was a time where Jesus was going through a really sticky spell and Aguero was pretty much clean through. Who was it against now?
Liverpool. Liverpool. He had Jesus hadn't scored for a while and yeah. Aguero, and just, I think he had an open goal and he squared it.
Yeah, he squared it to him. And you know that's just a measure of the man. You know that he was thinking of his teammate, a young Brazilian who's looking to take his place. So the Argentinian squares it. Who does that like? Do you know what I mean? You wouldn't get that on my Sunday league team. You wouldn't get that.
Yeah, my dad always tells a story of somebody he once played football with. I think it was Sunday league where this fella had a stutter. And the only time he never stuttered was when he was swearing. And what happened was he dribbled through the entire opposition, rounded the goalkeeper and slotted it into the empty net, except the centre forward had sprinted to get the final touch to knock it over the line, even though it was going in already. And he just said he never stuttered all the way back to the halfway line.
That's a strange one. Apparently Charles I lost his stutter as he made his speech just before they cut his head off. But I digress.
Yeah. Anyway, Aguero, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the measure of the man, he's such a nice person. You can tell everyone loves him. I remember once when I was a gardener, we were driving the van back up the motorway and there was a massive tailback and it just so happened that we pulled alongside Sergio Aguero in his Bentley, white Bentley, and he had Zabaleta with him. And in front, in an identical car, was Mario Balotelli, who was just being Mario Balotelli and kept slamming his brakes on and trying to make Sergio crash into
the back
him.
Of him. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And like Sergio, you could just see him, he was laughing his head off, just going, oh, why is he doing this? And just watching this sort of carry on from the cab in the van. It was just everything you'd see about him just makes you think, wow, what an absolute dude. I mean, the guy's just like, he's got a heart of gold. I mean, he must have a hat-trick ball pool at his house that he dives into when he gets in. It's just a ridiculous, consummate footballer, and the fact that his character just shows what a decent guy he is as well. You just can't speak highly enough of him.
Richard, how lucky are we as fans to have seen him? Because the thought that always strikes me time and again is, look at his talent. He could have gone anywhere and he didn't.
Unbelievably lucky. Like, he's I already said it, one of the best players to have ever played in this country. So the fact that we got him and we had his best years and beyond, we are just extremely, extremely fortunate as football fans that was us. I think any football fan, you know, you turn up and watch a player like that, whether they're against you, whether you're a neutral who's gone on a mate's ticket, whether you're watching on TV, if your generation has a player of that quality, you are lucky to get to see them, because it's players like that that make football worth watching. Like, scoring goals is, it's the purest form of football, isn't it? It's the key
part of
football.
It's the hardest thing to do as well.
Yeah, it's what we turn up to see, is what causes us the most celebration. And Aguero did it hundreds of times. He's just, we are so, so lucky that we got to see that. And yeah, I think opposition fans coming to the Etihad who've seen him have one of his best days, you might not go away happy with it, but you know that you've been in the presence of greatness, unquestionably. Mm-hmm. And that's, as a football fan, sometimes you have to sit back and appreciate that. We've been on the end of it against great players. Mm-hmm. And Aguero has put other teams on the end of it too, and it's just magnificent.
I'd never even thought of it like that, you know. I remember applauding that Arsenal side off from Main Road when they came to Main Road and did us, I think, 5-1 in the end.
It was 3-0 at half-time, was it?
Yeah, 4-0 at half-time. Yeah, something ridiculous at half-time. And I remember applauding them off as a home fan, just going, Arsenal have been really good today. And Henry especially was fantastic. Mm. And I'd never even thought of it, Chris, but opposition fans do that for Aguero now.
Yeah, totally. I mean, even United fans speak highly of Aguero. And he murdered them on several occasions. That goal against United, the Phil Jones face goal. I don't believe it.
So. As it will forever be known. Yeah,
one would hope. Yeah, but like he just ploughed through them and just, you know, I grew up getting absolute abuse from United fans and. You don't expect that it will ever stop. You know, I remember certain derby games. Like, there was one when we were 2-0 up at Main Road and we lost 3-2. And I remember saying to my dad, like, are we ever going to beat United? Because I don't think I'd ever seen us win a derby. And you just start thinking, is this ever going to stop? And Aguero just, like, talk about turning the tables. It's like, this guy owns you. This guy, this guy will score against you. I love him. Because you must absolutely quail when you see him on the team sheet, because you know he's just going to give you nothing but pain. He's going to score against you. We're going to win. Good night. Sit down.
Yeah, there was a run where I think David De Gea had played something like 10 Manchester derbies and never kept a clean sheet because Aguero had beaten him every time or something like something ridiculous like that. Just one after just game after game after game, you can guarantee his goals. I want to kind of pivot to the Everton game because, Richard, you were lucky enough to be there on Sunday. What was it like when he came on?
It was touching. Like, obviously, you get that that moment where people are looking at the subs bench once it gets past a certain time. You sort of don't really bother with that in the first half because he's obviously not coming on then. But then once you start getting to 55, 60 minutes, you're casting your eye over, looking at him warming up. Is he coming back to the bench? And then obviously when you see him start taking his bib off and getting match ready, there's like people are chanting his name just to ready to appreciate him. And then Everton kept the ball for the longest spell that they did in the game and probably the longest spell that they have done for the last few months. they didn't want him to, clearly didn't want him to have his moment. But no, it was just really exciting and it was really nice and you knew it was going to be emotional, and obviously him coming on signified, I suppose, the marking of the end, because we were watching, you know, it's not unfeasible that sort of any touch from that point could be pretty much his last one. Everybody's desperate for him to score. We haven't had that moment really with any of the other departures. I remember sort of Yaya getting a good chance towards the end of his, and then just after he went off we got a free kick in prime Yaya territory, and he didn't get his goal. So everybody, I think, was just desperate for him to score. And obviously, he was chasing down that record for the most Premier League goals for one club. So, just, it was great. And it was also really sad because he deserved a full stadium.
Yeah.
But the fact that he could get some sense of what he means to the people of our club, it was very, very touching.
Yeah, Chris, we worried when he came on that he wouldn't get enough time, that there wasn't enough time for him to get on the score sheet with the game, you know, as comfortable as it was.
Yeah, absolutely. It was his decision to start on the bench as well, apparently, according to Pep, which I think was, well, obviously, retrospectively, you can be 20-20 hindsight-wise, but it's like, he obviously knows something we don't, doesn't he? He sees things that people don't see, or he wouldn't be able to score that amount of goals. But the finishes that he produced against Everton were nothing short of sublime. That little shimmy, the drop of the shoulder, he finds that space, and to just use the outside of his foot to just stare it home, like it deserves, the ball needs to be there. And yes, thank you, the universe has spoken. That is where the ball is ending up. And that header, like, oh my god, what a delicious piece of, just, you know, that is how you head a football. I remember saying at the time, like, that's like Niall Quinn. The ball started outside the post and curled in. Pretty gutted that Gary Neville followed up and said he was a bit like Niall Quinn. Nicking my shit there, Gary. But like, yeah, just, you know, you run. He's one of these players, you just run out of superlatives for him. I just, yeah. We were talking about him a bit. I talked to him a little bit in the Patreon, and I had to stop myself. I genuinely, you know, he does inspire such emotion that, like, that banner where it said, "You changed our lives," was like, it's really struck a chord. Because looking at a lot of the other banners, and some of them, frankly, the fonts annoyed me. The use of space, wrong colour, you know, light blue against white. Come on. You look at the cameraman zoomed in on that. Like, you've not chosen wisely there. But that banner really did chime true. He has changed so many lives. The ripple effect of him, what he's done, the amount of, if you just, even just that title winning goal in 2012, the amount of babies born because of that, the amount of relationships saved, the amount of United fans who will have fallen out and maybe never spoken again, you know, had to leave home. I mean, it's just a beautiful, beautiful thing. What he's provided us with culturally is not to be underestimated.
Richard, obviously the first goal especially, you know it, a goal means something when the goalkeeper runs the length of the pitch to celebrate with the team and dive all over everybody. Edison did that. Talk me through what it was like in the ground the moment you realised, not that he was, not that he had scored, but that he was going to score.
Well, first of all, I don't know that Edison running the length of the pitch is a signifier of anything other than Edison is the goalkeeper who most hates being in his own box. But yeah, I think any excuse for him. But no, it was great. Like, obviously, the ball comes to him probably slightly unexpectedly because Everton had been in what I recall as fairly easy possession. I don't think they should have lost the ball, really. But when it drops to him from Fernandinho's tackle, interception, you just had that sense of this is the moment. And
you're obviously at that point.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, everybody was bouncing. And I mean, they say, don't the great entertainers always leave you wanting more? And I don't know that he could have done that in any better way, except in what Saturday might hold yet. But in terms of bowing out of the Etihad, I wish he was staying longer. And that was sort of the first text I sent after he'd scored that goal. Or maybe it was after the header, I can't remember. But certainly after one of them. Why is he leaving? And I know why he's leaving. But yeah, it was just a great moment. Like the first one was great because he'd given you that dream ending. And the second one was the icing on the cake to take the record. Because he deserves that record.
Yeah.
You look back, again, just to bring his goals to minutes back into it. Like, you're basically talking about, if Aguero's playing, you almost know that you're starting a goal down. And I know that excludes, like, 5 against Newcastle and 12 hat-tricks. But you just extrapolate pure numbers, he's probably going to score against you. He's odd to say he's more likely to score against you than not in any given game.
He's just that good, isn't he? He's just that good.
Yeah, so those two goals, I mean, as Chris said, it's not like they were tap-ins worthy. They were brilliant goals that represented the variety that he's shown us. And I think it also quite fitting that the two goals came at the same end as the QPR goal and his first two goals for City as well.
Yeah,
beautiful symmetry to that.
Yeah, well, as we've said, Aguero is the final one of the title-winning team from 2012 to leave. After 389 games, 260 goals and 14 pieces of silverware, with possibly more on Saturday, it's time to say goodbye to everyone's favourite striker. I've been taking a look at Aguero's last decade at City. I've got another confession to make. There's only one place to start.
It's finished at Sunderland. Manchester United have done all they can. That Rooney goal was enough for the 3 points. Manchester City are still alive here. Balotelli, Aguero! I swear you'll never see anything like this ever again. So watch it. Drink it in. Two goals in added time for Manchester City.
That goal will forever be one of the most amazing moments in football history. Here's how Aguero remembers it.
That goal for me is the most important in my life. So all the time I watch that game. My father all the time. Also my son. But yeah, I think that goal will be all the time in my mind.
He was speaking to Martin Tyler for Sky Sports.
Just the only one I remember, I say, Mario, you to be in the number 9. So if I receive a ball, I try to find you, to 1-1-2, you know? And Mario said, okay. And then the first moment when I received the ball, just I looked to Mario. My mind in that moment, I think, I thought, okay, I have to, one chance.
That was the culmination of Aguero's first season at City. He'd been phenomenal all year and had left a lasting impression on his debut. Here's how Joe Hart and Vincent Kompany responded after that 4-0 win over Swansea, where Aguero scored twice from the bench.
He's not bad. No, he's come in. 38 million is a big price tag, and 38 million well spent. You know, we've not really seen much of him. The manager's kept him quite well protected. Obviously, he's had a big summer.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely come in with a surprise, I would say. He's got great potential. And, you know, the most important for me is that also you saw some moments of him, you know, defending and, you know, being hard on the man. And for us, for the team, for the season, is going to be very important.
His manager at the time, Roberto Mancini, was also singing his praises.
For me, he's a fantastic striker. He's a young. I think that for us, he will be a fantastic player in the future.
Aguero developed well at City. By his third season, Manuel Pellegrini was the manager and the striker had an excellent understanding with new signing Alvaro Negredo. Here's how Paul Everton judged it on the podcast.
I think Negredo's been fantastic for Aguero. He holds the ball so well and he brings Aguero into the play. Like, this season he's been absolutely unplayable. And I think you have to credit that to Negredo, his willingness to run. And to be fair, Tevez wanted a bit of attention, Dzeko wanted a bit of attention, but I think Negredo's happy to be, you know, the second man sort of thing and help Aguero play his best.
The goals have been a constant. In his City career, he's scored against 32 of the 33 Premier League teams he's faced. He has the Premier League records for the most goals by a foreign player, the most goals for one club, and the most hat-tricks.
I'm so happy for the record, but thank my teammate because they helped me in this nine years, so I'm so happy. When I scored the second, and then I think one more, I break the record, the hat-trick, no?
That's right, yeah.
So, I want to keep scoring more goals, but all depends my teammate.
And all of that was after becoming City's all-time leading scorer. That was in November 2017, when he scored his 178th goal. He overtook Eric Brooke. That was in a 4-2 win over Napoli, and he spoke to City TV afterwards.
I'm very happy for this moment, so now I'm very happy because to win. I'm very happy for my teammates because they helped to me every game, and the support and the staff. So my family in Argentina and my friends, so I'm very happy for this moment. No?
It's not all been plain sailing, though. There was speculation he may never get the chance to reach that landmark. That was back in 2016. When Pep Guardiola arrived, there was tension, as Aguero was occasionally left out of the team. The new manager wanted more from the striker, but always insisted it wasn't the beginning of the end for the Argentinian.
I appreciate, like a football player, I appreciate, like a man, what he did here. And the next time, before you give that opinion, you can call me. Before you decide he's not in my plans, you can call me before you write if he's in my plans or not my plans.
Aguero changed his style of play and City reaped the rewards as they hit 100 points in 2018 and 98 points in 2019, along with winning a whole host of cups too. But the striker was getting headlines away from the pitch as well. In August, he stood up for the City fans that were manhandled by police after being forced onto the pitch at Bournemouth. Zach Weir was arrested and charged, but the case against him was dropped after CCTV footage showed a surge behind him pushed him onto the field. He explains how Aguero helped.
I started remonstrating, almost got myself in trouble with the police because the steward made an accusation. I think I was thrown out pretty much straight away. But obviously his involvement prompted a lot of support on social media, which was a great help to constantly receive that support. Was great, so obviously I can't thank him enough. I sent him a message last week, which obviously he saw, and then he replied to me, which was nice.
What did he say?
I sent him a message. I did Spanish at A-level, so I was able to speak a little bit about that to him, just to maybe a bit more personal to him in Spanish rather than English. And he replied just saying thank you, and my Spanish is great, but I'm not too sure about that.
It was that 2017-18 season where he was also involved in a car crash when his taxi hit a lamppost in the Netherlands. That was after going to a concert on his day off.
Accidents, as you say, can happen anywhere. What is your view on where he was at the time? Did he have the club's permission to...
Day off, I'm not the police.
Even from the beginning, it was always clear that Aguero understood what it meant to be a City fan too. It was difficult not to warm to his cheekiness, as this Puma interview in 2017 showed.
Name one current Manchester United player you'd have at Manchester City.
I prefer no. Yeah.
No.
I prefer none.
No one.
No.
His talents and his persona weren't limited to the pitch, though. A few years later, while out injured, he went big as a Twitch streamer. It's in Spanish, but here's what happened when he scored a golden goal winner in the game Fall Guys.
Vale, el que meta gol ya gana, ¿eh? Así que tres las dos bolas ahí. ¡Dale, papá! ¡Dale, papá!
¡No! ¡Vamos!
He was gaming because of a knee injury, and it was that knee injury that ultimately has done for Aguero at City. He's barely played this season after suffering regular flare-ups, plus a spell sidelined with the coronavirus. After Sunday's win over Everton, where Aguero scored twice from the bench just like his debut, Guardiola couldn't hold back the emotion.
We love him so much. He's a... He's a special person for all of us.
You're not having second thoughts, are you, Pep?
He's so nice.
Is it because of the human being? As well as the footballer.
Yeah, he helped me a lot. It's so good.
It's been the challenge for you. You've had to do it replacing totems of this football club.
We cannot replace him. We cannot.
There wasn't a dry eye in the house when Aguero said his goodbyes to the Etihad a few minutes later. As the last of the team from 2012 to leave City, it really is the end of an era. Is he the best that the Premier League has ever seen? Well, we'll leave that for others to decide. But he's definitely the greatest centre-forward in Manchester City history for us, and he's left a lasting impression.
Hi, this is Paul Lake, and you're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast.
Please support the show by becoming a backer. patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
That was a look at Aguero's last 10 years with City. Chris, it is a credit to Aguero, isn't it, that he adapted his game when Guardiola came in? Because it's no secret that Guardiola likes his strikers to press, and Aguero wasn't the sort of... He was the sort of player that could have three touches in a game but score three goals, and you'd kind of be happy with that. And Guardiola didn't really stand for that sort of striker.
Yeah, absolutely. It's credit to his character. It's like he just keeps on giving, you know, he just keeps on impressing you. And like you say, you'd be happy with three touches and three goals. You're happy with what he's giving you. But when it comes down to it and he's asked for more, he delivers. And I thought it was a big ask because he has had the odd muscle injury, and you know the high press isn't exactly high on his agenda or priority list. You wouldn't have thought prior to that, but you know the strength of character of the man to knuckle down and say, "Yeah, well, I will do that." It speaks of his humility and his work ethic. And like I say, just run out of superlatives for him. It's just an absolute godlike, legendary City player. And I don't know if I know it's quite a segment on Aguero, as it should be, but we should also reference the Bournemouth game where there was a little pitch invasion for a celebration, and the local constabulary decided to be a little bit heavy-handed with a few of our fans. And Aguero, it's one of my favourite ever photos where he basically just stepped in to help a brother out, basically. Yeah. Someone's getting manhandled and he stepped in and he's basically stood up to the copper that was manhandling one of our fans, which seemed a little bit out of order, and he obviously thought so. And he's
Well, did you read what he wrote in his book about it?
Well, he's just sort of went Barrio, was it?
He said it was like the Barrio, but he said the police officer was being rough. There was like 4-on-1, and they were being rough. So I just told the coppers to fuck off. Like, fair enough, mate.
Talk about using your power for good.
Exactly, yeah, and also it's a nice little nod to his English ability, which he chooses to exercise very, very wisely. You know. Timing is everything when you're a striker.
Richard, just looking at his record on the pitch, obviously we talked about the goals. It's incredibly sad, isn't it, that his final season has been hampered so much by this knee injury. The fact that, you know, he always takes, when he's been injured, he always takes 3 or 4 games to get back into the swing of things, and that's just not been able to happen this season because of the fact that, you know, he's out for a couple of games and then he plays a couple, but then the knee flares up again and he's just had no rhythm whatsoever.
Do you know, it is sad. I mean, there's sort of no two ways about that. Like, he deserved, I suppose, more to his final year. I suppose if he'd have not had those injury problems and been on the pitch scoring goals, then it probably wouldn't have been his final year. So maybe that's a bit of a paradox anyway, but... like, it's not his legacy, is it? It's not what he's going to be remembered for. There'll always be. I think you do have to, when you talk about Aguero, you probably do have to acknowledge his injuries as well. Because if anything, they make his achievements all the more spectacular. He's still got himself so high in that goal scorers list. If he didn't have the injuries that he had once a season for so long, then he's probably challenging Shearer's record. So, yeah, it is sad. But in some ways, you know, all of that is what made those two goals so perfect as well, because there was no guarantee that he was coming on that pitch to score goals, because it's not what he's been doing. He is out of touch with it. You're right that he does take 3 or 4 games to get warmed up, and actually in this little final few game renaissance, he'd scored an absolutely cracking goal at Palace, and then he's given us 2 goals in front of the fans that were absolutely brilliant, and maybe there's a little bit of extra value to those because they were a little bit more unlikely than goals have been for his entire career. So it's not what he'll be remembered for. None of us will think Aguero and think final season wasn't great. Do you know? Yeah. We're going to think QPR. We're going to think that moment in time that he owns, like that is his forever. And that moment in our lives that has his name on it and has his wheeling away on it, and has that, when you watch it back, that intake of breath as the crowd goes silent for a split second before the world for City fans changed forever. Like, I in the moment, it's sad he didn't get to do more in his last season, but I know I won't dwell on it when I think of Aguero.
Just kind of finally for all of this, he scored all manner of goals for City. Chris, obviously the QPR one is the one that is the go-to. What other ones do you remember best from his time?
There's so many in there. The Phil Jones face one, obviously. There's the one where he had no right to even think about finishing against Liverpool.
Yeah.
Where he's basically heading towards the corner flag and he's looped it up, and it's like the Liverpool players, even as the ball's in the air, they don't seem to be too concerned about it. There's a goal against, so I don't want to nick all the goals here, but just two more. There's one, I think it's against Burnley, again from an acute angle out wide, where he's just absolutely thwacked it, and it's almost like it doesn't matter who's in the way or where the goal, the player ratio is, it's going in.
Yeah, that Burnley goal is incredible, because he's got such a narrow angle, and he actually hits the near post. He hits the near post, but he's hit it that hard that just goes across goal and goes in.
Doesn't it hit a player as well?
Yeah.
It's just phenomenal. Like, nobody does that. And the other one is the goal against Liverpool in that 2-1, which gave one of the greatest football photos of Aguero as he wheeled away, and there's blood splurging down his knee to his low socks because he can't pull his socks up because his calves are so muscular and perfect. But that near post finish where He takes a touch, it sits up. Nobody's scoring from there. Again, the defender that's on him can't get any nearer. He can't. There's nothing being done wrong really defensively, but it's Sergio Aguero. So he lashes it into the roof of the net with I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about these goals that he's scored, because you know these are the moments of our lives as City fans, and I really appreciate it.
Richard, I was going to say that Chris is taking all the best ones, but there's so many Aguero goals, it's just not true. There's plenty of others, aren't there?
Yeah, so I was worried that, like, one of those mind-blank things where you say, name your favourite something, and, like, it happened in the Patreon, where I think you asked to name Joe Hart's favourite saves, and I forgot them all apart from one.
I did as well.
briefly worried for a moment the same is about to happen again, and of course it hasn't. The second goal against Swansea on his debut, absolutely brilliant. I think that one, not just because of the excitement of his debut and it was a great goal anyway, but in my old seat in the second tier, I sort of sat in the corner directly behind him, so I just had the perfect flight of the ball view. And so it was one of them where you sort of knew as soon as it left his foot that something special was about to happen. The first goal in the Pellegrini Moyes 4-1 derby, where he makes it look so easy because the ball comes at him behind him. Mm. I think around the 6-yard box.
Is that the left foot volley?
Yeah. And he basically cushions it in. And I guess the sort of style I'd describe it as is, if you're playing, I mean, I've never done this to any quality because I'm atrocious, but if you're playing like heads and volleys with your mates, then like, that's the weight that you want to put on it, because you don't want the ball to drop down. You want it to land softly on someone's foot or chest or whatever. But he does that into the net past a top-level goalkeeper from behind him with his weaker foot in like a really high-pressure game, because like Pellegrini was still very much settling in, and things hadn't clicked immediately. I think we'd already lost to Cardiff at that point. So there was a lot of riding on that derby at the time. And he's pulling that out the bag, and it looks so easy. And the only reason it looks so easy is because he did it. And then other ones, I know it's already been said, but I have to mention the Liverpool near post goal. I won't try and review it again, but everything about that goal makes it a favourite. The noise, my God, the noise at the Etihad that night. Absolute leathered the ball in at Sunderland in, I think, a 4-1 win. Where he I think just inside the 18-yard box, like probably sort of 17.99 yards out, and like that ball had done something to him. He was obviously angry at it because he's just spanked it. And I watched that one on TV, and I honestly, it was in the net before I knew he'd kicked it. It was just absurd, absolutely absurd. And then another mention for in a perverse sort of way, he scored an absolute belter against Leicester in 5-1 win. I think it was 5-1. And that one's a bit of almost a regret on my part, because it is one of the only games in my entire life. I think I've done it 3 times. It was a game that I left early because I had tickets for a concert that night with Kieran Murray of this parish. So we'd left early, and as we were walking away, we had the roar behind us. So
who are you going to see? It better be good.
Well, it's all subjective, isn't it? We were going to see Kendrick Lamar.
Oh, fair play.
Yeah, he was very, very good.
Yeah, not as good as Aguero's finished that night.
Not Sergio Aguero, though, is he?
He's absolutely not. Very different skill sets.
His goals to minutes ratio is shit.
Yeah, awful in the Premier League, isn't he? A couple of others that haven't been mentioned that I want to throw in as well. He scored one in a 6-0 drubbing of Chelsea where he bent it into the top corner from about 300 yards out, having like 5 minutes earlier missed an open goal from a yard. So he's like, yeah, sure, I can't finish that one, but I'll just pop it in the top corner from this distance, thank you very much. And the other one was, I don't know which one of his goals it was, but he scored scored a hat-trick at Watford, where and there was one of the goals he dribbled through the entire team and then flicked it past the goalkeeper as he came out and hit the post and went in. And it's a sublime finish. Honestly, there must be compilations out there on YouTube of the best Aguero goals. Go and look at them, because you can entertain yourself all day with those.
And they will have some absolutely atrocious music over them.
Yeah, they will. That's the kind of forte of YouTube compilations, isn't it? But before we move on, I should point out as well, the MCFC Fans Food Bank Support Gang are currently raffling off a fantastic Sergio Aguero oil painting by Manchester artist and City fan John Dempsey. John's got several paintings hung in the Goose Green Gallery in Altrincham, where this Aguero oil painting also has a reserve of £200. It could be yours. All you've got to do is make any donation to the Greater Manchester Food Bank's fundraiser. The best thing to do is take a look at the Food Bank Twitter page at MCFC Food Bank, and the link is on their profile there. You can donate as much or as little as you like. Your donation amount isn't going to change your chances of winning. Once you've done that, forward the donation receipt to them on email, and the winner will be announced on Thursday the 10th of June. All the details are on their Twitter account, as we say, at MCFC Food Bank, or you can email them mcfcfoodbank@gmail.com for help. Remember, you can donate as much or as little as you like. Everything is going towards helping the 20 food banks in Greater Manchester, and you could win yourself a wonderful Sergio Aguero oil painting to mark his 10 years at City. Now it's time to move on, and we're going to hear from Howard Hocking for the final time this season. He's also paying tribute to Aguero's last decade at the Etihad.
I too want to talk about Sergio Aguero, and when I think about what to say, my mind keeps flashing back to one thing: how he saved us all. Because when I see a headline quoting Bernardo Silva saying the Champions League final is the biggest game in City's history, I know he is wrong, and I know he couldn't possibly comprehend, as a 17-year-old in Portugal that day, what it meant to all of us that Sergio Aguero scored that third goal on that warm May afternoon at the Etihad. Now that goal against QPR needs no description for anyone listening to this. It's embedded in our brains, in our psyche. I am now going to do something terrible, and it is terrible, because I get nervous watching that last minute of footage, even though I know Aguero scores, still to this day. So the terrible thing I will mention is what would have happened if he'd sliced that ball wide. Well, we probably had a minute or so of open play to score, but essentially it was a done deal. And I mention that unthinkable prospect because Sergio Aguero really did save us all that day. The scars of not winning the match were barely faded away now we're in 2021. He saved us all from hell, if there is such a thing. The worst summer of our lives, and the unshakable belief that we would always be a United shadow, and that typical City really was a disease for which there was no known cure. All that wiped in one swing of a chunky thigh. And whilst that match may have taken years off my life, that one moment from Sergio gave us City fans far more than a comfortable 4-0 win that day could ever do. Gave us fans an experience and a moment that 99% of football fans will never themselves experience in a lifetime. Its importance is essentially infinite. And he saved us and then became the club's greatest ever goal scorer, just for good measure. Because that moment and the season that preceded it was easily enough for legend status for Sergio. But whilst that moment can never be matched by any player in any circumstances, he still did his thing for another 9 seasons. Well, 8, truth be told. Pep is right that he is not replaceable. City may well bring in a world-class striker and win loads of trophies and will form loads of great new memories. But there will never be another Sergio Aguero. If Harry Kane scores 40 a season for 7 years, that would be amazing. If Haaland does the same for 10 years, even more so. But there'll never be Sergio Aguero, and I don't think they'll have that something undefinable that he brought to the table. I hope I'm proved wrong, but distilled down, that is just how it is for me, and perhaps others. But then we don't need to replicate our departing legends. Yaya Toure was not replaceable, but players come in, make the mark in their own way, and we all move on. But yeah, away from that day for Sergio, the goals are quite important too. Strikers will always be revered more than anyone else. Fernandinho could be the greatest DM in the history of the sport, but there's no stat to prove that, whereas goals can take you a long way. I mean, he scored a goal against United that fossilised Phil Jones' face forever, and he could score them all, headers, tap-ins, long-range efforts, and he hit the ball in a way that few can. The ball stayed hit, for sure. And he scored against the best. No stat padding for this guy. If he was in the mood, and he usually was, he was likely to score against any team in the world. Now, I don't like to rank City's legends, of which there have been many in recent years. David Silva's departure got me the hardest. Sergio Aguero may have pipped that, but I wonder how the last year has heightened all of our emotions, Pep included. All I know is he's on the podium with ease, and that returning to grounds next season will be joyous for me. But there will still be a hole left by not seeing Aguero in a City shirt again. His constant injury woes have made the transition slightly more bearable, but only slightly. But essentially this whole piece is pointless, sorry about that. Because that special something about Sergio Aguero is not definable in words. And if it is, then I'm not good enough a writer to do it. Forget all the stats, the goals, the staggering debut season. Forget the cheeky smile and how annoyingly attractive he is. There's just something else. One of those people who has a presence in a packed room without speaking or doing anything. Now, I've never been in a room with him, but I instinctively know that statement to be true. And because what made Sergio Aguero unique is not easy to define, I've wasted everyone's time here. But hey, hopefully I took your mind off the Champions League final for just a few minutes. Until, of course, I said the words Champions League final. And so, as is often the case, I end up going back to that opening season. It's a Newmont and a bare-chested hero swirling a shirt above his head. Perhaps that is why we almost took his genius for granted at times, as he peaked early, climbing Everest on his first day in Nepal, and then just hanging around near the summit admiring the view. I think the fact that Sergio Aguero, from Argentina to Spain and then to an often grey northern English city, became City's record goalscorer with ease, is because he stayed with other legends for a decade at Little Old City, the club no one cares about, and that is the biggest endorsement you can give for how to run a football club properly, if you can excuse the occasional misstep in deciding to join the European Super League. Because how else would Sergio Aguero, David Silva, Fernandinho, Vincent Kompany, Yaya Toure and more stay so long at this club? It's not because of results alone, as even within the last spectacular decade, City have had their barren spells, low points and upheaval. They stayed because they became honorary Mancunians, because they felt loved by those around them. That's why Pep Guardiola is reduced to tears at the thought of a player leaving when he has seen hundreds of them pass by in his time as a football manager. City's legends were always more than mere footballers, and Sergio Aguero certainly was. A statue is the least we can do for them, and him, before they begin a new chapter in their lives. I just never thought the City chapter would take so long to read. At the end of a difficult year for us all, perhaps it's the right time for Sergio to move on. We begin the next season hopefully with a fresh start, a clean slate, and with new legends lined up to earn their own statues one day. They're all unique in their own way, but for reasons I cannot put into words, Sergio was more unique than them all.
Hi, this is David Bernstein, and you're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Blue Moon Podcast.
That was Howard Hocking there. We are actually going to gear change now and change direction entirely for this show, because there is the small matter of a Champions League final on Saturday. So, Richard, what does it mean for you as a City fan to finally get there after 10 years of trying?
I mean, it's really big, isn't it? I probably need to like say at the start, because like I've been on record a good number of times on this podcast as saying and explaining why I view the Premier League as more important. So, I think at times I've probably said the Carabao is more important, and my feelings on that are open to change on Saturday. Or they're open to very much be, yeah, they're open to very much being even more fixed than ever. But Jack Gorn gave a great line on last week's podcast when he said, you don't have to think it's the most important game or your favourite game to accept that it's the biggest game City you've ever played or ever been in. And I think it's, I think that line has recalibrated my thinking a little bit about what this game, I mean, obviously I'm well aware of what it means, but I think it's maybe changed my view of it a little bit, because this is City on what is perceived as the most elite stage. It's the competition that, regardless of what I think or what anybody thinks, it is the competition that is viewed as the most prestigious. It's the one that City's various failures or falling short or frankly bad luck, it's the one that has almost defined them for so long now, because everybody can always say, whatever you point to, everybody will always say, yeah, you're not won the Champions League. I don't think that it should be the barometer of success and prestige, but it is. And I sort of have made my peace with that. It just means absolutely loads. People will find it hard to find the romance in this, and I understand it for neutrals, but in terms of what it means and where the romance lies, like the romance is in the City fans that were there in Division 2 and that are going now, or the sons and daughters of mums and dads who were there in Division 2 who were travelling with them to Portugal to go and watch City on the biggest stage of all, or it's the City fans who have never seen a relegation and have come to it a slightly different way. And
the fairy tale is for them, isn't it? It's not a fairy tale story for City. They've got a lot of money and bought good players.
Exactly.
That's it. But for the fans haven't changed. Yeah.
Yeah, it's all that. And so, you know, for me on a personal note, and maybe that's not what people are tuning in for, but for me, it's I spent 23 years of having a season ticket with my dad going home and away. For a good deal of that, I've been around Europe with him, and we're not going to the final, but he's going to be at my house. My mum and dad are going to be watching it, whilst my own son will hopefully be asleep upstairs in his little City baby grow, and I hope it's something that I can tell him about in time. And to me, I think that's where the romance in this kind of thing lies, and I'm very touched. Probably underselling it really, but it's a really big deal that City are there, and I can't wait.
Yeah, Chris, how are the nerves? Because I'm kind of likening this to the FA Cup in 2011, because for me that was the first time I'd seen City in any final whatsoever, and I was absolutely cacking my pants that day. I'm not going to lie.
Champions League final, not that bothered, mate. No, it's we've kind of had to take that tack, haven't we? It's been so kind of mean to us over the years. And similarly to what Richard was saying about the sweet, sweet Carabao and its alluring aroma, you know, this is the biggest game, whether you like it or not, and whether you want to win it just to say to UEFA, ha-ha, we've won it even though you didn't want us to, or whether you've been desiring it like the most precious thing that you could conceive of, you can't deny it is the biggest game on the biggest stage. And yeah, I've been trying to like calm myself and be of like a collected disposition about it, and I'll turn to the right and say, hey, it's okay, we're fine, it's cool. And then I'm the only person in the room, and I'm like, oh God, you're coming to the wall again. And then I'll get on with my work or whatever. And then in a quiet moment, a thought will pop into my head, and that thought is Champions League final, Champions League final, Champions League final. You know, it's kind of getting to me, man. It's creeping up on me like the Champions League final, I guess. I mean, it's starting to, dominate my every waking thought, to be honest.
Not a healthy position to be in, really, is it, given that it's on Saturday evening and we're currently recording this on Thursday night?
Well, I mean, that's near, isn't it? That's near.
Yeah, but you've got virtually 2 days of just constant thinking about it now, which
I know, mate. I know, mate. I'm trying to distract myself from it. What was the question? Yeah, I'm nervous.
Nervous, yeah, good. Because I am as well, so that's all right. Richard, are you glad that this is being played outside the UK? And I use that word kind of with a little bit of trepidation, because obviously, if it was in the UK, it would probably give a lot more fans the opportunity to go to the game. I was calling for it to be in the UK as well, because that would help both City and Chelsea fans get there. But ultimately, because they're playing an English side, the fact that it's not in the UK, it feels like a European final, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly that. I've got foot in both camps on this one, 100%. Not like me to fence it, I know, or see both sides of an argument, but it's true. Like, it had to move. I made my opinion on that very clear on the last time I was on the podcast, which was after the semi-final, second leg. It had to move. It was the only fair thing to do. For supporters, it was the right thing to do for the game itself, and for the occasion. I think Of course, it would have been lovely to have it in this country. The Wembley being an obvious place to host it, and there was a willingness for that to happen, and to make other events move to facilitate it. But then on the other hand, if you're walking down Wembley Way to watch City v Chelsea, does it have the same special feeling? What's going to be different to an FA Cup final? Okay, it's a different game, but we've been beat by Chelsea at Wembley in the last couple of months. We've beaten them in a League Cup final recently. We've had Munich Shields, granted at Villa Park. We've had an FA Cup semi-final over them. Like this, it's not a rarefied event to play Chelsea at Wembley. And so for that reason...
Can I just say as well, it's a bit of a comfort zone, isn't it, for Chelsea playing it in London?
Like, yeah, that's true.
Advantageous to them in terms of us having to travel down to London, and they're just like, yeah, we're in our manor, as they, I believe they say down there.
As they say all the time.
They do, yeah.
Sorry, I thought Suggs was on the podcast then. It just, yeah, I...
Watcher. Sorry about that. anyway, but yeah, I totally agree.
Getting it in Portugal is, for those fans that are fortunate enough to be going, I think it will give it more of a special feel. Selfishly, I'd have had more chance of going if it was in London, but I don't begrudge anybody going to this game, and a lot of them have got to do it for probably a cheaper or at least similar cost to what they'd have paid if it was in London. So I think it's worked out pretty well. I think it's a decent resolution.
Yeah, let's actually talk about the football now, because we haven't done that yet. And Chrissy, are you at all worried by the fact that Tuchel's Chelsea have beaten City twice recently?
A little bit, in terms of momentum and confidence. And I've sort of been debating this with my mates, saying, you know, we've not played our strongest team. It's been met with... a modicum of derision in terms of, ooh, the secret formula, they don't know what our best team is. Of course they do, it's our best team. We know, everybody knows what our best team is. But as a player, you know, you're playing against a team and you're beating them, but you're knowing full well that some of the players in that team are going to be replaced by players that you've not recently beaten, that you know are better, probably in the back of your head, you're thinking, we've just played against these players and beat them because they've been picked because they're not the optimal selection.
Yeah, they're not at the desired level just yet, yeah.
Yeah, and the players that we are going to face, does that mean they're better than us, aren't they? Because they've just won the league. One of the pivotal points in the season was the Chelsea game where we, dismantled them with no little aplomb. And... I'm not too concerned about it. Obviously, it would have been nicer to have beaten Chelsea in the last couple of games. It sticks in my craw a little bit about the FA Cup semi-final. Not because, you know, the word quadruple should be stricken from the lexicon, but like, we could have won that. I felt we kind of palmed it off a bit, and, you know, who am I to second guess Guardiola? But yeah, there's a few question marks there, but overall, no, not that concerned. We're going to go in there knowing full well that at full strength, if we play well, I don't care how well Chelsea play, who they pick, who they've got to select. If we go in there, put a good performance in, we're going to win the game. So yeah, bring it.
Yeah, Richard, you look at how the season's ended. There's a lot of people talking about the idea that City have had effectively a few weeks off because they won the title early, and Chelsea have had to battle to get into the top four. So they've had a bit of rhythm because they've had stuff riding on their games, whereas City have been rotating all over the shop. But then equally, Chelsea were lucky to get into the top four because they've lost, what is it, three of the last four games. So they haven't really got that rhythm. Tell me honestly, is it just bollocks, that end of the season stuff?
No, I wouldn't go that far. I think there's a reason that I think people in pretty much any sport talk about momentum. I mean, I think momentum's a big thing in anything. I think you can, you know, in my job, if I do that well one day and I have a really good day and, I don't know, I've maybe... done something above and beyond and helped somebody out in a way that I don't normally get to, I'd probably go into work the next day feeling a little bit better about it than if it's just been a standard day and I'm sort of, you know, driving home in the rain, knowing that I'm going back to another fairly standard day tomorrow. Like momentum does carry you through things sometimes. And I think in sport, there's a reason it's a cliche. So I don't think it's rubbish. I'm not sure how much it will come into play in this game because there's two ways. Again, there's always different ways to slice it. Chelsea are in match rhythm. They've had to be playing the best players but they've lost games, including a cup final. Weddle feels somewhat aggrieved as well because they thought they'd equalised and then it was ruled out by VAR and everything. So that will still be on the mind, I'm sure. City had a mad game at Newcastle with a weakened team. Mad game at Brighton that they lost. But on the final day, put in a really, really good performance against an all right team, who, to be fair, weren't really all right on the day. But, you know, they're not always the most easily dismissed. So City go into the game with momentum in that sense. So I think it's... I probably do put a lot of stall in the fact that City haven't been playing their strongest 11 in the two games against Chelsea. Like Chris sort of said, like his friend saying, but they know you're going to play. But again, to quote from a previous podcast, there was that line that I think Sam Lee had dug up about the only real practice is lived experience, or the only way of knowing how to deal with something is lived experience. And we haven't quite given Tuchel that. He's a wily manager. He's a tactically shrewd manager. We're heading for maybe the most cataclysmic nerd off of all time. But he has not played Pep's best City team, and City's approach won't be the same as it was in those two games. And I don't know what the result will be, and I don't know how confident I feel because one-off games are one-off game. But I would bet the house that City will create more than they did in those games.
Yeah. We've talked about the team selection, Chris, and the fact that we can pretty much name what that team is going to be. There's one or two questions over a couple of positions, though. So I'm gonna throw these to you guys. And the first one, I guess, is Cancelo or Zinchenko. What do you reckon he's going to pick there?
I don't know. I mean, on form, you'd probably say Zinchenko, bar that pass that conceded a penalty against Everton. I think he's been excellent. Cancelo had a bit of a shaky start, perhaps, to the season, and then has been a bit of a powerhouse, and then maybe a little dip. But for Chelsea, it's, you know, horses for courses, and you pick the team for the game rather than just on form. That one for me is more of a 50-50 than possibly the other one, which you might be about to mention, which is Rodri or Fernandinho.
Yeah, well, that was my other one, Richard. Chris isn't sure between Cancelo and Zinchenko, and perfectly understandable. Are you sure between Rodri and Fernandinho?
I think I'm probably fairly sure on what my preference would be. I'm not sure on what Pep will do.
What's your preference?
I think I prefer, on form, I think I prefer Fernandinho.
100%.
I like Rodri. I know he gets a bit of stick sometimes, and I think he's a bit harshly scapegoated, which is an odd word to use because there's not much to scapegoat when you win two, maybe three trophies in a season. But I do think sometimes don't get me wrong, he does. Not every performance is a great one from him yet, but I think
that's
he does
part of his
job.
Role, though, isn't it? Yeah, exactly.
I think he does his job pretty well, but I think this occasion probably calls for something a little bit different. I think Fernandinho does a bit of everything. I think he can do what Rodri does. He can maybe dictate the pace of a game a little bit better. He's probably got a little bit more nous in slowing a game down if we need to. If there's a
nous is the word. Nous is the exact right word.
If there's a sort of frantic few minutes, couple of hefty tackles, as long as he's not the one dishing them out, then he can calm players down. I think people probably you know, if he gives you an instruction on the pitch because of what he sees, maybe the players probably trust that a little bit more than they do with Rodri at the moment.
He's a clever man, isn't he? He's a clever man, yeah, a clever footballer.
Exactly. But I guess for that reason, if I can double back ever so slightly, I think that maybe would also force me, as if I have any decision-making power, but that would probably prompt me to say Zinchenko over Cancelo, because I think maybe Zinchenko, which seems like, I don't know, this might sound a mad thing to say, so feel free to tell me I'm talking nonsense, but I reckon at the moment it probably offers you a little bit more defensive solidity, and what you lose in some of the sort of almost revolutionary attacking play, I think that solidity could maybe be pretty valuable in this game.
Yeah, I want to. The final question for the preview is about the referee, because him and Guardiola have history. This is obviously the referee that didn't allow City's second goal against Liverpool. He sent Guardiola off in that game at half time. Does that change the way you're thinking about this game, Chris? Are you nervous about what the referee might do in this game, or is it a case of City can't control that, so just control what they can control and they'll win the game if they play well?
Yes, I would agree with what you just said in terms of do what we do, do it well. But we were doing what we do and doing it really well against Liverpool, and that cretin ruined it. I hate him. But yeah, I really, I'm trying to avoid being that, well, I've done it now, haven't I? But like what Pep was saying about not giving it a second thought. Nah, what are you on about, mate? Nah, I've not thought about that. Nah. It's kind of like, I don't want to put those ripples out into the universe for fear of what comes back.
Just, you're very about karma this week, aren't you?
I'm trying to be karma. Like, it's hard. But like, terrible puns aside, it shouldn't matter. It shouldn't matter. But he is one of these referees that, you know, the mark of a good referee is if you don't really notice him. And he has a history of being a bad referee because you notice him. And that game against Liverpool being a case in point, there were some big swings in that game that really ruined it for us. And yeah, I think Pep's playing it sensibly from a psychological point of view in his response. He was just very dismissive and just like, you know, and if the ref sees that, then I just hope there isn't an agenda that we'll have to talk about combating.
Yeah, Richard, I don't want to worry you further. This was the same referee for City's extraordinary 5-3 win over Monaco in 2017. I don't know if you remember in that game, but I think the score was at 0-0 at the time, or it may have been 1-1 at the time. Aguero rounded the goalkeeper, or went around the goalkeeper, and was just kicked into the air inside the penalty area. And it was blatantly obvious to everybody but the referee in the stadium that it was a foul. And to make matters worse, he booked Aguero for diving.
Yeah, vaguer recollection of that than the nonsense against Liverpool. Our experience with him is that he's a bad referee, and we've suffered more from what the incompetence that we've seen than we have gained from it, significantly more. But that said, I don't really worry about stuff like that before a game, because it's just so far out of control. If it were to rear its head and we suffer for him making atrocious decisions, all right.
It's all out of our control, though, isn't it? We shouldn't worry about any of it.
That, okay.
It's been ruining my mind.
That's really true. Yeah, what a great way to absolutely annihilate this podcast.
Yeah. Speak for yourself, though, Chris. I've got hopes of playing on Saturday, I thought.
Well, it's to the detriment of the scouting system if you don't.
I've just made the Fernandinho decision, so I know that I've got some control.
Yeah.
But no, in all seriousness, like, we know we all watch City regularly. We know what City can do. We also know what their weaknesses can be. So there's things there that we can be confident about and we can worry about. But the referee, we've seen him twice. I think I don't know that we've been ref by him any other times. I don't pay enough attention to referees to note the performances across other Champions League games or domestic competition. So, like I say, if I have cause to be angry, then I'm sure I'll be angry. But I'm really, other than answering this question, not paying it any thought.
He's due a good game against us. You know, Give against the lad a chance.
That's an interesting choice of words, against us.
Yeah, spare me the Freud on that one. Jeez. Oh, God.
Yeah. Right. Well, nobody.
Nice as well.
Nobody got the 5-0 correct scoreline against Everton on last week's show, so that means there's only one more chance to add to our total for this season's charity bet. We're raising money for the Christie, a hospital in Manchester treating cancer patients, and we're doing it with 3 correct score singles from William Hill. So far this season, we've raised £1,185. Chris, what's your score prediction for the final? We're going for 90 minutes, by the way.
We're going to absolutely smash them 1-0. It's going to be horrible.
If that happens, it's 5-1 and £50 if you're right. I've gone for a 2-1 City win because I, like Chris, am a bit of a masochist and think it's going to be really, really tight. That's 8-1 and £80 if I'm right. Richard, what's your scoreline?
On the basis that I'm really bad at predictions, in the hope of getting something that's within sort of reason but might be decent odds, and not at all reflecting my actual confidence, I'm going 3-0 City.
That's 14-1 and £140 if you're right. So I do hope you're right, because one, it makes the final a lot easier for us to bear, and two, it adds a lot of money to the pot. So yeah, fingers crossed on that one. You've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change, and please gamble responsibly. If you'd like to find out more about gambling responsibly, then head over to begambleaware.org. And that's it for this week's Blue Moon podcast. Thank you very much for listening, and thank you to my guests, Richard Burns.
Thank you very much, David. And Chris.
And Chris Higginbottom.
Cheers, guys. Pleasure as always.
We've got an extra special Patreon bonus show this week. It's a look back at all 6 of the legends of the 2012 title-winning team that have left under Pep Guardiola's management. We're paying tribute to each of them as Sergio Aguero becomes the final player from that era to move on. That bonus show will also be available on the main feed in a couple of weeks' time, but if you'd like to hear it before then, you can sign up to our Patreon page. You'll get the bonus shows on any of the tiers at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast, and you can also go back and listen to all of the extra shows we've done since we launched the Patreon in 2016. On top of that, you'll get ad-free versions of the main show as well. Next week will be our final podcast of the season, so let's hope it's a positive one after the Champions League final. We are planning for it to be another virtual Blue Moon podcast live, meaning that we can have an ex-player on the panel and we'll have a bit of an audience as well. But I'm afraid to say that I am so bad at planning this year that that's as much as I know so far. We've not booked anybody yet. If it happens, we'll be sure to let you know on our Twitter feed at Blue Moon Podcast. But if it doesn't, then we'll have another regular show coming your way next week as a replacement. Fingers crossed for the final, everyone. Godspeed.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please support the show. Patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Come on, you blue boys.
Which ones? Which ones?
Our ones.